Welcome in to episode number 300, or if you're counting at home, it's 400. So I figured Janice Person would be the perfect person to have on the show because, A, Janice, you're a repeat guest for this show. You cover a whole bunch of things, and you're one of my friends that can always go with, let's try a crazy idea. Sure, Paul, anything you say.
Anything you say.
How are you? And I mean it. How are you?
Good. You know, like the weather is nice now. It's sunlight later in the day. I mean, those are things that actually make me really feel better. My family's good. You know, I'm doing well at work. Right now, things are okay.
Well, you're back on the MTOM Show podcast, which is a production of Iowa PBS. And in Iowa, we have been dealing with warmer weather. Are you still in Missouri? Let's get that out of the way. You're still in Missouri.
I am still in Missouri.
So, I mean, we had 70 degrees yesterday. What did you have?
Yeah. It's been in the 70s here most of the week. I have been working out on the deck a lot of the day with my computer and, you know, still working on the computer. But
so you and I have met online, but we've also met in person. You've met my children, which is always, I think they kind of were like, Dad, where are you taking us? What are we doing? So thank you for your patience that day.
It was lovely to meet them. And we got really good cookies. I can't remember what bakery we were at there in Des Moines, but it was really neat. It was towards the Capitol from downtown. It was on that side of downtown, at least.
It is. You happen to be, that was back when people traveled for things and they met people. Now, it's been more than 2 years since we've chatted in person. Have you done many in-person meetings in the last 2 years?
You know, it's been spotty, right? So last summer, I did a really big conference and felt good about it. And then like 2 weeks later, Delta kind of took us back into being at home a little bit more or being a little more careful. I think it's really different for people like me that live in a big city versus a lot of farmers. So, you know, even in my neighborhood, I can run into hundreds of people just by going to the grocery or whatever. So I think that the kind of difference has been a little bit hard for some people to understand, but I got back out in the fall, you know, was doing some meetings. My family had all of us together, which is like four generations, and I don't even know how many people, but we took family photos and all. My mom was about to turn 85. We did all that for Thanksgiving, and then Omicron hit. So it has been a strange like process of getting out more and then coming back. And right now it's like getting out a lot more, and it feels so good to see people again and to see faces and stuff. But I am a fan of the mask, being an asthma, you know, kind of sufferer. I wear a mask maybe more than some people, but to be out and about.
Will you continue to do so?
I'm going to be careful. Like, I'm going to decide when to. If I was at a concert, I would obviously wear one, right? Because there's so many people packed in so close and you're there for a long time. Making a quick trip to the drugstore or something, I'm good with that. It's not a problem. Airplane, I probably would wear it just because everybody's so close. But, you know, most of the day-to-day now, I would struggle to find one, although there's always a stash in the car and there's always a stash near the front door because, you know, when deliveries were made and stuff for a long time, you wanted to be on your best behavior.
I totally get that. And part of your change in meeting people, I guess the original question was to say that your life has changed in the last 2 years as well. You're not just a corporate person anymore. You're your own corporation.
It's weird. Last time I was here, we talked all about cotton and all kinds of things. And I was looking back at that and I thought, wow, I had a campus office that I went to all the time. I started my own business in, then 6 months later, the pandemic struck. So I was doing a lot of public speaking, which I love, and being out with so many different groups. And then, you know, that kind of just went away. And like others, I did some of it online, but it gave me a chance to do other things too. And so I've played around with a lot of different things in this time period. I think Everybody talks about doing pivots, and lots of people have been looking for other jobs, right? Like, you know, you hear a lot about the big reengineering of American employment. For me, I've been able to do all of that, and I'm just working for myself. It's grounded communications, and I can do whatever I want to here. It's me, and I have somebody that works really close with me, Molly, who's been with me. She was actually in my corporate job for a while, and at some point after I had left about a year later, she's like, could you please find room for me? And we were able to make that happen too. So
the reason for the departure was your own choice of freedom, or was it something else?
I think it was a combination of things, Paul. I'm one of those people. So I was working at Monsanto, for folks that may not know, and Monsanto was in the process of being purchased by Bayer. And I'd undergone that before, years earlier, when Monsanto purchased Delta Pine. And I remember at the time getting a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C together. Because one of the great things about being single is if you're not paying the bills aren't getting paid. So you better have plans together. And as I did that, I decided, you know, you've been doing these other things on the side, outside of work. Could you make it a business? And so I took an entrepreneurial program, and here in St. Louis, it was primarily for women, a lot of people of color. It's from, you know, the idea of get small ideas started and small businesses started. It was such an amazing program that by the time we got to a place that was no longer plan B, that was what I really wanted to do next. And so I was in a really good spot. It wasn't the right fit for me at Bayer, and you know, I have great friends there and hope to, you know, continue doing work with them and stuff, but it just wasn't the right fit. And so this allowed me to continue some things that I really wanted to do. But it has been challenging. I mean, being a small business in the pandemic is not necessarily, it would have been nice having somebody paying all those health insurance bills and all those kind of things, but it's worked out really well for me. And I think it was the right choice. So we're good for now.
Well, yeah, I guess I don't want you to say it wasn't the right choice, but, you know, I'm not looking for that deep dive to say, Janice,
you're not going to make
really
me cry.
Working. Yes.
You're not
well,
make me
I've
cry.
Only made a couple people cry on this podcast in our episodes. Sometimes it's been me. But there's something about being independent that I suppose in listening to you talk is both rewarding and frightening at the same time.
It is. I mean, I will tell you, the good thing is I was able to get the financial stuff really figured out in this program. And because that's not what I'm most adept at, right? Like the marketing side of things, the talking about things, to come up with creative ideas to sort of sell things. I love doing that. But the, you know, you have like regulations and accounting processes and you need insurance. You know, like I do a lot of strategic communications consulting for people. And sometimes I know things that like four people in the world know, right? Because they're going to be doing a big merger or whatever it is. And I have to have insurance because if something I do goes wrong, it's a bad day. So a lot of those things, having a program help me figure that stuff out was perfect for me. And it's made me be able to be successful in this gig. But
what? Go ahead.
I can see why it's not for everybody. And I loved my corporate work. So it's not about, you know, I mean, I just did that for 30 or so years. I've had a long career. So it's kind of like, oh, well, I could do some other things. So
do you do some of the same things that you did in the sense of subject matter? I mean, it's still agriculture, but is
I love a lot of cotton. I love ag. And I'm doing some work with the Cotton Council right now, right? As a client relationship, which is so much fun. In the past, my cotton blog was on the side. It had been part of my job early on to be all in cotton, but then I'd gotten away from it. So it's kind of given me a chance to get back into that. And I started my own podcast, you know, like...
You're stealing my talking points
for
you, but go ahead. Started your own podcast. What's it called?
So it's called Grounded by the Farm. And I interview different farmers mainly about the foods they grow, but sometimes it's about a topic like transitioning the farm from one generation to another or something. But it's all geared at my family who are all city folks, right? Like, I mean, yeah, my brother has a farm, but it's not where he or his wife get their income. It's a hobby farm is the way most of us would describe it. They do incredible work there, but and they feed themselves largely. So it's amazing what their farm does. But at the end of the day, they get a paycheck and health insurance from someplace else. And my family, most of us are people who like to cook or, you know, even my 20-year-old niece the other day was like, well, I'm just going to get HelloFresh for a while because they'll keep me cooking, but I won't have to worry about some of the other stuff, right? It's hard to do those things when you're 20 and you got to work and you're going to school and you're studying for exams. But she's like, but I want to keep cooking. And so this, like, you know, I talked to a guy, one of our recent episodes was about tomatoes. And my God, I love tomatoes. Like I told him it's like sweet corn to the people in the Midwest. For people in the South, we love tomatoes so much. And I know there are some here in the Midwest, but sweet corn seems to get people here so geeked out. So I was like, oh my God, I get to talk to Tony Tomato. And now I'm planning a trip to California where I'm going to talk to a date farmer and a melon farmer and a guy who grows fresh basil. Hello, a field of fresh basil. I cannot wait. So I talked to all those kind of folks. Also talked to, you know, Dave Walton there in Iowa talked to me about corn and mm-hmm. Shannon Latham talked to me about pumpkins. I have lots of good friends in Iowa too. So
Shannon can talk about a lot of things with you. So pumpkins, I'm amazed that it was just pumpkins that you covered.
Well, that's what I try to usually focus on, one kind of food or crop kind of thing. And then some of the times I'm doing educational pieces with it to get into the schools and stuff. And pumpkins, I mean, hello. It is perfect. And Shannon has that great Enchanted Acres, right? Like people spend their weekends there in the fall, but you know, they take their kids and take those incredible photos of them with pumpkins. It's just amazing. So I get to talk to all those kind of folks. I want to be like you guys. I have my own podcast, but the podcast has been around for over 2 years, Paul. Yeah. It's been a while since I was on the show. So
I know
it's going well.
Well, we had a lot to cover. I wanted to talk about you and how your change was. And I know many people know it because they follow you, but you also have some insight. And again, in the time that I've been away from, I was telling you right before we started recording, I haven't been in the actual office for going on almost 3 weeks.
What 3 weeks that has been.
Well, that's the whole thing. So 3 weeks ago, end of the show was right before we recorded with Ted Seifried. That was the week that Russia invaded Ukraine. And that story became a topic. My boss, David Miller, and one of our field photographers, Phil Blobaum, and a producer, Sarah Frasher, they had gone to Russia and Ukraine. I believe the title from the 90s, it was either the 90s or early 2000s, from Russia with Love, they had done, and Dave's probably going to correct me that I got the title wrong, but they had insight, and they've been communicating with people over there, and they kind of have some insight. And I told a lot of people during state basketball where I was at, covering the girls' tournament, I'm like, well, you know, this Russia thing. And they're like, yeah, tell me a little bit about it. And it was interesting how you can get wrapped in a certain world, but in agriculture, you can't really escape the topic.
No,
so give me a background on why you have been paying attention to what's going on over there.
So my background on why I pay attention primarily isn't in agriculture. So I'm a communications person, right? I went to journalism school. And I got a graduate degree in journalism from the University of Memphis. And I did my thesis primarily so I'd have a good excuse to travel internationally, because at that time, everybody didn't travel internationally when you were 10 years old, right? So I wanted to go to Russia and I wanted to go so bad. It was crazy. So I scheduled my whole idea of my master's degree around going to Russia. I took classes in Russian. I finally was able to go over there and do a deep survey, because at that time, for people who aren't familiar, it was the USSR and Gorbachev was in power. And he was beginning all these programs of perestroika and glasnost, which is like restructuring and openness. And that was so hugely different from history. And you could finally do research in the Soviet Union or Russia without getting permission and having them decide, here's exactly what you're going to study. And so I was able to do that with a series of newspapers in a small town. If you follow World War II, it's called Stalingrad back then, but it's called Volgograd. It's on the Volga River. I have a thing about river towns between Memphis, St. Louis, all these things. And I spent weeks there meeting all these people in the media and getting to know them. And then I did a, you know, quantifiable survey so that it's, I really like the conversational part, but for the research of a master's degree, I needed surveys and we did some content analysis and things. And I've been watching, you know, Putin's role in that country as it's grown since like 2000. He was in a leadership role. Then there was an election and he wasn't. And then he was put back in. And it's been tough to see the cracking down on media, you know, as somebody who loves the freedom of being able to do whatever I want to on the airwaves or whatever. It's not the way it's working in Russia right now. And I think seeing the two really different ways the leaders are going about things, Putin and Zelensky, it's just, wow. I mean, I'm just captivated by it. It's the culture. It's how they treat communications. It's so many different things. And I find myself pulled in. I also have been lucky enough to have a number of friends from Eastern Europe. I'm still in touch with friends in Russia, although that's really complicated since social media have all been taken down. And it's really hard to get word back from people. But it's what you have to deal with. I have friends here in St. Louis who have family that were still in the Ukraine the last time I talked to them. And I have friends who worked in the Ukraine for years who are now back in the U.S. And I can't help but watch it. And, you know, heart just sinks when you watch what's happening. But I also am weirdly interested in how they do these communications things and how the two leaders are positioned so differently that it feels like one feels a little bit more old world and one feels a little bit new world.
Well, and but we always have to remember what we see here, if we're not trying hard to find other sources, there's an image that is portrayed. And I'm not saying that media is portraying it, but it is the image that is getting out there from a certain group. And that's why it is important to have independent, diversified, not saying do your own research, but yes, do your own research and see what's going on there. But it's always been hard to get certain bits of information out of countries like Russia, we'll say, like China.
Eastern bloc of countries in Europe. And people notice it even when they travel there, right? So I've had friends in Prague that when we met up in a tourist area, they were like, I love Prague, blah, blah, blah. And then they spent a few weeks in an Airbnb and they're like, oh my God, the people here, like they're so mean, they're rude, they're blah, blah, blah. No, you're in a neighborhood where tourists aren't normally. And a lot of people in large parts of the world have been trained to be really suspicious of outsiders. And the Czech Republic is one of those places, right? Like it's been pretty brutal if you tell people what you know is your truth sometimes. And it seems like that may be coming back into play more in Russia than when I was able to do my thesis there.
Well, in traveling the world, I mean, travel period is a sense of you see tourist areas. I'll use your city of St. Louis. Most people are familiar when they go to St. Louis. They know where the Arch is. They know where the ballpark is. They might know where Union Station is, the zoo, but they don't necessarily go to the Hill neighborhood. Finding Ted Drew's original stand is hard for many people.
It's and not a might gridded street pattern, so it's hard.
You know, it's just, you don't see it. But maybe, you know, you said the whole Airbnb, the VRBO, whatever it is, maybe that is opening up our world a little bit and allowing, but it also still hard to compensate for. What are these visit? Who are these people that are next door for two weeks? What do they do?
Right? I mean, you know, I look at my neighbors and, you know, when you go to your car, you say, hey, how's it going? You know, you know what's happening with their families and stuff like that. And you suddenly have an Airbnb house next door, it'd be very different. I don't know that I would be that willing to be that involved, right? Because well, you never know.
Yeah. And you've been at these places and yeah, you're not necessarily asking your neighbors. I mean, I'm a person that will sometimes do that, and I'll ask you, where are you in from? Well, no, I'm the outsider. They ask me, and the neighbors probably don't like that VRBO next door.
I would imagine it's a little bit difficult. And in St. Louis, I'm not sure, you know, a lot of our neighborhoods, you can't have an Airbnb. The city has decided, University City, you have to have a residency permit to be staying here, right? So it's kind of wild how differently parts of the world can work. But, you know, if you're around the coastline and you live there, then you probably know where some Airbnbs are in your part of the world. And I just think, you know, how people approach different people, you know, whether they want to understand, like, what's going on, all those kind of things come into mind, whether I'm looking at Airbnb or looking at this war, or if other people want to call it a special military operation, right? Like, but I think looking to try and understand is one thing. I don't always look to be involved.
Let's go back to where we don't pay attention to our neighbors in Russia, Ukraine. Did you travel to Ukraine?
No, but I have so many friends from there. It's amazing. Yeah.
Because I describe, you know, Ukraine and a lot of the country is what the I states are like.
It is. And Volgograd's not that far from the Ukraine. It's probably the biggest city of Russian territory that's close to the Ukraine. But it is wide open spaces, right? Like beautifully wide open spaces. And I know a few farmers that are from that part of the world, and you know, and farming in the Eastern Bloc was very different, right? So controlled situations. It's, I think, a little bit different in Russia now to be able to be a farmer than it used to be in the old school, because there's a weird bridge of some market and some control, but it feels like media is being back in control. And that wasn't the case for a while. So
what are you citing? Information that you're reading? Are you citing certain sources more than, are you leaning on more information outposts than others?
Yeah, I'm a fan of really big newspapers on stuff like this. Like as I was watching what was happening in the Ukraine, I knew it was about to get bad because the New York Times sent Sabrina Tavernisi there. She used to be in their Russia office, and suddenly she left the US to be in the Ukraine for a while. And having people that have been, you know, reporting that I've followed a lot has been really nice. But it's interesting. I mean, I do still get news from friends in Russia through the few channels they can use. And, you know, I knew about this woman who showed up on the nightly news with a sign that said no war and was screaming from them before I knew about it on Twitter. So it is kind of interesting that you can get that combination of sources, but wild times in terms of trying to decide what to look at and what not to. I will say I trust the New York Times more than I do on some other things in terms of like war coverage, right? I can't watch it on TV very long. So I don't like to do TV because the scenes are hard.
Well, yeah, they have to put visuals out there, and it is harder to tell a war story on television than
they're telling stories all day long. And if you watch it, you see the same horrible, you know, the same pictures too often. Whereas in podcast and TV, I mean, podcasts and newspapers, you can go to a depth that TV just will never we'll never make it.
I'm fully aware of it. I mean, that's big part of my background. And this is, you know, still I consider it television. You know, not very many places. Well, only those in the direct part of agriculture give 11 minutes to the commodities. You know, I mean, that we're even different than even other shows that do what we do, because I've asked our analysts who appear on other programs, like, are we similar or different? And they're like, well, this show, they just talk about these three things, and then they come back and you talk about these three things. Here, my guest, Arlen Suderman, this week, he has to be up on everything. You know, I have a list of corn,
Wheat,
corn, soybeans. I might ask him about cotton, and then he has to talk livestock too. And livestock's not his game as much, but you know, that's what our audience has come to expect over time.
Right. And I think that is an amazing kind of way to go. But it's also interesting how many farmers' lives who ride specifically on beef and only on beef probably have somebody else they would go to for their market information. But a lot of people have beef as part of their overall mm-hmm. operation. And they also have corn and soybeans and wheat. And so it's a good, yeah. I mean, you can do both breadth and depth. And that's on a war thing, I typically go for more depth. And and in life, I typically go for more breadth. And in my business,
well,
I like
exactly.
to do different things.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to tie up one more thing here on market from the old days. They used to start with the livestock. That was the commodity market analysis that you did first. And now it kind of gets put towards the end. And because there were myself included, grew up on a farm that was dependent on the livestock. And so that's an entry for so many people into farming, whether now it's growing pigs or turkeys or chickens, let alone beef and hogs. So
well, and there's so many different pressures out there on all of those things. So,
So when you look at your life and all these things coming together, it sounds like with Grounded Communications that you have been able to put the things that you value and market that to potential clients, whether it is a podcast or blog or, you know, written things or marketing campaigns. And so in that sense, do you really feel like you're working? Are you really working, Janice?
Oh, believe me, I'm working. Believe me, I'm working. But it's work that I enjoy. I mean, it doesn't mean that, you know, it doesn't have to be hard labor just because you're working, right? Like you don't have to be outside, you know, grinding rocks or something to make it work.
Oh, those are great days. Yeah.
I've had some of those days where I feel like I'm doing that. And, you know, even some days I'm sending out 50 emails hoping I, you know, get the right thing back. But it is kind of neat. And I didn't mention I'm doing something on this culture and communications piece too, because that's been a lifelong interest of mine. And I think it's a problem for those of us in ag or anywhere. Like it's so easy to be in your little part of the world and lose touch with another part. And I think, you know, having been deep, deep, deep in ag, I'm still a city girl at my, you know, at my core. And so I always look at things a little bit differently than if I was born and raised always staying in ag. So I do stuff on that too. I love it. I mean, I've always loved my work though. I mean, I used to argue with people that I had the best job, right? And I was on the front line for Monsanto in issues, and I still thought I had the best job. I don't do jobs I don't like, I guess.
And there's plenty of people who get in that Monsanto was in the front lines of many of those more passionate people on topics.
Yeah, but I still had a chance to change the world, mm-hmm. right? Like I, God help me, I'm a true optimist. I think you can really make a difference. And so whether it's helping people understand the world differently, which crosses most of what I've been talking about, right? So, or helping somebody do something new in their business that they've never had that step to have an opportunity to launch a new product. I've had that experience. So let me put it to work for you.
And you've launched, again, the podcast 2 years in. It's called what?
It's called Grounded by the Farm. And my other program on culture and communication is called Grounded and Rising. I do a lot of training kind of things there, like using Canva, but also thinking about how does climate change really impact agriculture, and really talk about it instead of just do a 2-minute segment, have an hour with an expert talking about what's happening in climate change and what's going on in the world in these big meetings that very few of us have a chance to go to, but he does.
Yeah. And you can always bring those together and find them in that point. And maybe we have a couple of, it sounds like I need to hit you up for a couple of guests to discuss it here with
I'm
me.
I'm glad to give you recommendations whenever you need them.
Janice, I thank you so much for giving me the time, because I know it is so valuable and I do mean it, but I also really
enjoy always love it.
Getting to talk to you.
I love talking with you.
Yeah. Janice Pearson, or Person. I always say Pearson. That was the whole joke in the first episode, was the Pearson Person thing. And I knew I was going to do it. I get to the very end. She's the founder and CEO of Grounded Communications, based in one of my cities I like to travel to, because they are apparently going to have baseball this year
April 7th.
St. Louis. And a new manager. I got to get used to this, too.
Yeah, I've been watching him in spring training. It's kind of neat.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. This has been the MTOM Show podcast. If you have any feedback for me, hit me up at markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Thanks, Janice, and we'll see you next time here on the podcast.